It's a runaway, runaway. Tom Selleck's mustache in the runaway.
Rich kids gone bad with mob connections.
Well, welcome, everyone. If you're listening to this, that means it's Monday, and this is the Really Shitty Movie Podcast.
And the world has not ended.
Not yet. Not by robot takeover, at least. I'm your host, Jeremy Cooney. Every week, myself and a few of my favorite people here, we're going to watch really shitty movies and then break them down for your listening pleasure. This week, I'm joined once again by some of my favorite people. To my left is my risible, radiant Ruby, Ree.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, no problem. And across the table from me is the dark, dealing, dastardly Declan.
And Geth Sympathizer.
Geth Sympathizer, yes. You are a destroyer of universes. And sitting approximately 40 miles away from me.
Last week it was 20.
I know, I got it right this time. is the magical, monolithic Madman Mike.
Oh, wow. That's quite a title for me. Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Like his ego wasn't big enough.
So like I said, every week we're going to be watching movies that are deemed to be really shitty movies. I've scoured the internet and asked the closest people around me what their worst movies that they ever had watched are, compiled them onto a list, and every week we roll a D20 to determine which movie we're going to be watching next. So if you were listening last week, Declan, why don't you tell us what movie we watched this week?
We watched Mega Force. No, this week we watched a great movie from the 1984s. those 12 months that were in that year. And it was called Runaway. It was a movie about robots, household, manufactured servantile robots and construction robots that are programmed to kill.
Yeah. Starring Tom Selleck's mustache.
the biggest star of the show.
And Kirstie Alley's
hair.
It was 1984, you guys.
I know, like, what would you call that? I mean, if that's not a perm.
Oh, it's a perm.
Okay, so yeah.
Yeah.
I was making sure we were.
You don't get that wet.
Yeah, it's not flocked hair. It's a perm. Yeah. That was a fucking perm.
Ree, let me ask you. I didn't tell you anything about this movie before we watched it, and all I told you was that it was called Runaway and that it starred Tom Selleck, Gene Simmons, and Kirstie Alley. What did you think this movie was going to be about?
Yeah, I figured there'd be a lot of, like, running away.
Oh, okay.
Or, you know, some actual runaways.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, you weren't wrong.
I wasn't right, though, either.
That's true.
This should have been called Malfunctioning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or just Malfunction.
Because none of these robots ran away.
Like, except the first one. The first one was the only one that ran in the cornfield.
It technically was a runaway.
Was a runaway. There was.
Yeah,
because they more.
Because they're horse wranglers, essentially. Yeah. Like bad horse wranglers.
and they're really bad at it, too.
Yeah, and then they get sucked into something that's not even their department.
Yeah. True. Clearly. They were saying that the runaway part was more referring to their mental state of the robot.
Yeah, but still, that would be malfunctioning.
One of our newest little segments. They're all new segments, I suppose, since this is a new podcast. But what we're liking to do is sort of have Mike go over some of the events that were taking place around the time this movie came out, sort of to give us an example, because, you know, humans have a really short attention span and memory lifetime. So, Mike, if you would open up that delicious brain of yours and let us zombify through it.
Sure. So right around the 80s, we see like PCs becoming more commonplace. In 1981, IBM introduces the first personal computer, which means people can actually do their computing at home. Which is like a very novel idea that's just been created and has a lot to do with this movie, considering it's about basically robots that help you out at your house. Kind of a picture of what people in the 80s thought the future would be like. In 1982, some pop culture, Michael Jackson releases Thriller. So kind of an ode to what pop culture is doing right now, why their hair looks so crazy, why they dress in really vibrant, strange colors. Just because I like Star Wars. In 1983, Reagan introduces a defense plan called Star Wars. So because yep. Star Wars was recently released.
Which was putting weapons in like satellites, right?
Yeah, yeah. They put basically the idea behind it was they were going to put lasers and various other different types of weapons in satellites to protect us from nuclear war and or do preventative strikes or first strikes. In 1983, Sally Ride is the first woman in space. Again, this is right around that period where a lot of like woman suffrage type activities are going on, where we're trying to get equal rights going. And so the movie does touch on.
Bree just shaking her head at that.
Right, right.
Just like last time, she's like, "We're still trying.
We're still trying."
Yep, still trying. It's still not there yet. But so like this is the beginning of that period of time where things are starting to get pushed that direction. Also, something very important to Runaway is in 1984, PG-13 ratings are created actually specifically for this movie and a couple of movies released in this period of time.
Isn't he not cursing?
Yeah, you're gonna see a lot more breasts and you're gonna see a lot more adult in this stuff. Thing. Adult stuff in this period of time. Anyway, so that's the history leading up to Runaway.
For any Kiss fans that are out there, Gene Simmons actually wrote the album, all the music for the album Animal Eyes, while participating in this film. So, yeah.
Whatever. Nice.
Gene Simmons is a jackass.
And the guy who wrote the score for this movie, it was his first all-electronic soundtrack that he wrote. That's pretty interesting. A little bit of trivia there for the movie. So so right off the bat, before we actually start breaking the movie down, I'm going to reiterate something we sort of alluded to, that this wasn't really a terrible movie. besides, like, Gene Simmons was super over the top. And, and as you know, we'll get into the special effects and everything, but... But overall, I thought it was a pretty decent 80s film, if you're into 80s films. To start off, we get to meet Tom Selleck's mustache he's working on a robot. And
that classic 80s stash and those massive glasses, man.
Oh, man. And his character's name is Jack Ramsey, which is a very, you know, foot-forward masculine name. Like, wow, you know, that's the classic 80s male lead naming there.
Yeah.
We get to meet his new partner, who's a little blonde, named Cynthia Rhodes. And in keeping with perfect 80s standards, Rhea, what does she wear half the time? She's on in the field or in the office?
Yeah, she's wearing some high-heeled pumps and a pencil skirt.
Yep.
Because...
I know you
tactical like a pencil skirt.
Yeah.
I know you said pencil skirt, but I thought you said pretzel skirt for a second, and my mouth started to water.
Are you hungry now?
Pretzel. At the beginning of the movie, did anyone else feel really uncomfortable with the how close the camera was zoomed in on the circuits? Like, I felt my eyeballs being scratched by the metal.
Declan was like, you're looking at 250 megabytes of state-of-the-art RAM.
It's the 80s, so more like maybe 256 kb, like if you're real lucky.
Right, but we were watching full scale on a projector wall, so it was like a lot of shit. They didn't look small on our
So they get the little meet with the new partner, and almost immediately they get a call for a runaway robot, and we get a name drop within the first 5 minutes of this movie. And it's an agricultural robot. We watch them take a helicopter and find out firsthand that Tom Selleck's mustache is afraid of heights.
Yep. His acting, his overacting was kind of ridiculous in that scene. He like leans towards the window and seems like he's looking out, and then he pulls back right away and kind of shakes his head back and forth and then does it again. I'm just like, oh my God.
Yeah, I feel like the biggest fault in this movie, like generally speaking, is that it was incredibly predictable.
Well, I guess that is true. I would say that's true. But I would also say that I actually kind of liked the way he acted with his fear of heights. I think, number one, that's not something that you give your leading male character a lot.
Like, such a fault.
It's such a huge fault for him. And I think, like, even though a lot of time was spent establishing this fear of heights, especially towards the end of the movie, I thought it worked for him because I thought it was really, like, playing to the, really this crippling. Is a... Yeah, this is a credible fear that this person has, and that he is facing it head on. Like, so that's what that's my two cents on that.
And on the note of their like special effects, which you know you could argue that were kind of subpar, but realistically, even in that time frame and looking back, like that whole scene where he's looking down as he's on the ground toward the the plummeting death of the cars going beneath. It gave the same amount of vertigo as the way it was shot. So like, there was definitely camera tricks in play that.
Yeah, I'm not arguing that I would not argue that the people who shot the film necessarily did a bad job on the shooting and how they shot and the angles and the build up. But I will say that there were congruency errors throughout the film. Unfortunately, primarily on the female lead, like they did not make sure her makeup was the same between scenes or between shots.
Or that so, sometimes like, she was wearing her skirt and then sometimes she was wearing her pants. I'm like, did she change in the chocolate?
Well, yeah, it's like you should have a standard if you're going out into the field. Like, yeah. So anyway, we are flown to this field where there's a runaway agricultural robot. And what is the first thing we had to see these robots do, Ree?
Calipers minding their business.
How did they kill them? How did they kill them?
They
literally pulled them off.
Yeah, they were actually really nice about the pulling off of the leaf, and then threw them into a shredder. Oh my God!
And then over shredded them.
Yeah, it was a mess. Like you could probably put like tin cans in that thing, and you're just throwing sweet little calipers in there.
Calipers.
Nice.
It actually cracked me up a little bit seeing how like masterfully crafted this little itty bitty robot was for the task that it was designed to do. And in the back of my mind, I'm like, well, that's, you know, suspension of disbelief is already gone because that thing would have cost so much money to produce. And it's way too small to actually do that job. It's way too small. It has a little tiny claw and it has to do this entire field and pull bugs off of everything.
That's
like,
why it only does one thing.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's robotics for you. One thing can take care of an entire field when you'd have to have 10 people working in sequence to do it, because it's only doing one thing while there's 10 other robots all doing one other thing as well, and they do it at the efficiency of 10 people. AI are so fucking awesome, guys.
I mean, yeah, that would be the hope, in reality, that little claw is not going to pull hundreds of insects in time to prevent field from being eaten. But regardless of that, my point being is more so that in my mind, when I saw this bot, I immediately jumped to, this is where people got the idea to have robot tournaments to the death. Like this movie,
Battle Royale.
Is where they got that idea.
We then get to pencil skirt lady cop runs head first into the field for one of the corniest parts of the movie. I thought she catches the robot in this like shoulder high field of corn or whatever, and then lifts it up over her head and goes, "Yay!" And I was sitting there going, okay. This is a serious movie, right?
By the way, her name is Cynthia Rhodes, the lady that you're talking about in the pencil skirt. She was in Dirty Dancing, Staying Alive, Flashdance.
Yeah.
Wow, she was in Flashdance.
Pretty popular actress of the time.
And I will say that I am kind of annoyed that Stan Shaw was listed after Kirstie Alley in the credits, because I thought that he had more screen time than her.
Yeah, I agree.
And that's again the race factor of the 80s, but
she probably had more lines though.
Maybe she was probably paid more.
Probably shorter lines.
She's the one that was nominated for the award.
Oh wow! Like, so yeah, we found out that there was an award nomination for this.
She was nominated for best actress.
You want to try that again from the top?
No, I can't. Jesus.
I'm a professional was it, actor.
It wasn't an Oscar, though.
It was a Saturn Award.
Okay.
Of Academy of Science Fiction, Fantasy, and Horror Film.
Hmm.
Nice. Cue the chase music. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. As they run around the field.
And then we get an explosion that looks like a pack of C4 went off in the middle of the field. And they walk out with soot covering their faces, and that's it.
I mean, more like, if we're going to really talk about special effects, I would say it's probably more like phosphorus with some grease that they set on fire for the smoke. Like, I don't, like, there was no fire. There was no shrapnel.
It was just smoke
and noise.
Yeah, noise. But not far after that, we get a little exposition between Stanshaw, who's the African-American sergeant, and Lady Cop, where they sort of talk about why the mustache is on robotics instead of on the streets anymore, which has to do with his, again, fear of heights. And then they get called to the first driving plot point of this film, which is that a murder has occurred and a robot is to blame and that it's still at large. So we cut to the house that this is going on at, and there is a domestic house robot inside that's carved up. I think it was the wife and the nanny. And the father is outside sort of in shell shock, and there's still the baby inside with this robot. And there were a couple of weird things about this, and this is what Declan and I were talking about earlier, that we weren't sure if this was just the 80s or if this was just the stretching of the movie magic going a little too far. But there were, you know, there's this reporter and her cameraman, like, in front of police lines, like questioning the police as they're trying to deal with this crazy robotic hostage situation, like up in their face. And I'm thinking, like, at least in today's age, those cops would be like, you need to get back behind the caution tape. Like, this is an active scene. You can't be up here. Especially after we hear four gunshots ring off and they've determined that there's a .357 Magnum in the house that the robot has now.
And even if they could get that close, because most of the time if there's like a death at a scene or especially a hostage situation, police like will block off the whole
street.
Yeah. You can't even get close to the house.
Yeah. And on top of that, we do find out also that these domesticated robots are somehow have a network between them because they can read electromagnetic signatures outside of their area. That's why he doesn't talk to the reporters, because the robot could be listening into the electromagnetic frequencies.
Yeah. So I mean, if we want to talk a little bit about like the rules of reporting back in the 1980s, so the police force in the 1980s were a little bit more hands-on with reporters, and they would even purposefully release certain details to reporters to try and catch criminals, because obviously forensics weren't as good in the 80s as they are now. Also, the reporters themselves were actually a little bit more respectful to police officers back in the day. So they would say, oh, yeah, you know, you can film whatever you want, and then you're going to cut certain things out based upon what we're going to tell you to record. But, yes, they definitely took liberty with that. And there's even, like, if you were to look up information in the 80s, there was also information that they gave to their reporters about how to deal with law enforcement and how to cross into like the law enforcement side of the line, or that crime tape, if you will, to get the good shots, so that they actually train their reporters on how to get in there. And they just took liberty with it in the movie. But yeah,
well,
that was a thing.
An extreme liberty, because right after that, we do sort of get to see the 80s doing the predicting the future thing, where they have the cops using a drone to go and investigate the scene. The drone gets shot down, And so Tom Selleck's mustache puts on a an electromagnetic frequency suit to block his energy, which doesn't seem to work because the thing still knows he's there. But back to this whole Liberties thing, he goes in and then like five steps behind him is this cameraman. And I'm going, this isn't fucking Cops, man. Like, there would be no way that that cameraman would get that close to this, to him going in there without another cop tackling him to the ground. Like,
and why would you want to? You just knew that this thing.
Because it's going to make your fucking career, man.
Stabbed two people to death and now has a gun.
And one of the other things that I we talked about already a little bit, but these robots are actually really small and they have these single claw arm configurations that don't even have like the ability to pivot on angles very well. So being able to like shoot accurately with a gun for this thing would basically be impossible. Like, well, I'm just like laughing as it shoots with pinpoint accuracy.
Well, not only that, but like, unless this was a super specialized magnum, the max ammo capacity it could have had would be 8 rounds. And that thing shot 7 before he took it down. So literally, they could have just tossed in a couple more drones, had it expel its ammunition, and then gone in without the threat of being shot at. Like, so there was...
But if it's
shooting at the drones, then you don't have to worry about the child being held hostage.
But yeah. Can you imagine it trying to reload a magnum with that one little claw arm? Yeah. It's like
it would take like 7 hours. Oh man.
What about his dive onto the bed with his laser pistol?
Oh, you mean his painted black label scanner?
That thing was awesome. I want a label scanner like that.
There was somebody in the props department that was very proud of that, and you just insulted the shit out of them.
Good. I mean, power to them. You know, like Darth Vader's lightsaber was the flash stock off of an old camera. Like, you know, that's what you do when you're a prop department is you try and find really creative ways to make
ordinary things.
Exactly. But I don't know. It was very, very clear that it was a label scanner. So yeah, he does some pretty epic tuck and rolls and dives over the bed to disable this tiny little barely knee high robot and takes.
I believe the term was hat box size.
Hat box, yes. A form of measurement that would never be used in today's standards.
But I mean, it outdated the bread box.
Yeah.
It's true. So he saves the baby, goes back to his house with his partner, and we find that the woman he's been talking to on the phone is actually his robo-nanny. And I thought, man, robo-nanny. Now there's an 80s spinoff movie that I would watch. So technical difficulties, either Declan's mic's been off this entire time or it somehow got shut off while we were talking. So we apologize for that off the bat here.
Yeah, because you said you could hear me before.
I could, yeah. Something changed.
It was probably picking up off the other mics.
Oh, well, you guys missed a lot of funny shit, I think.
You were saying that he now heads home to the robot nanny after some really awesome, amazing laser tag that he won against a robot.
Yep.
Lois, by the way, guys.
What was that?
Her name's Lois.
Lois, the robo nanny.
And how surprised his partner is that it's a robo nanny
and not
excited.
His wife. See, that's the kind of thing, like, if I were to remake this movie again, there would be no love interest between these two characters. They would be partners. Like, that's the basis of a cop partnership.
Yeah.
Just because you're male female does not mean you have to fall in love with each other. Like, and then we get to meet his son, and I wrote down child actor is child actor. This guy
he spits out his lines accurately.
Yes, yeah, like he's in a cereal commercial.
Bobby, right? He's a full name is Joey Kramer, and he's actually in jail now
for drugs.
Look at those pictures.
Probably robo trafficking.
Robo trafficking child pornography, probably.
Well, Jeremy, I went to a dark place.
Dark
for a bank robbery.
So, can we talk about how this robot is smart enough to take care of all these complicated household tasks, but can't pick up on like the simplest of like conversational cues?
Mm-hmm. Or that it just feeds the child hot dogs.
Well, that was pretty
That's
awesome,
all
actually.
He was gonna eat.
I wish I had a robot nanny. I would have eaten so many hot dogs.
I had a really funny gay joke there, but I'm going to pass it on.
Pass it on, huh? I got a gay joke for that one, too.
Don't you judge me.
No one's judging you, Mike.
Lady Cop decides to take off. Tom Selleck, I do want to say this about Tom Selleck. I don't know if this is a character choice or if this is just Tom Selleck, but he is the most, like, calm-voiced, like, caramel-spoken police officer that I've ever seen depicted on camera. Like,
I'd let him talk me to sleep.
Oh, yeah. Like, yeah. You'd let him tickle you with his mustache.
Yeah, I would have put Tom Selleck on fucking negotiation.
He was so, like, just soft-spoken, and he was very non-aggressive with everything that he did until later in the movie when
Which I think is weird, though, because confronted. I think Tom Selleck normally plays more aggressive-toned, like,
characters,
and I don't feel like this was one of them.
I'll tell you, it's been a while since I've seen anything with Tom Selleck in it. I think the last thing I remember him being in that I watched was probably when I rewatched Friends when it first launched on Netflix.
Oh, yeah.
As Richard. So, and again, back kid, to the... Yeah. Sorry.
Kid actor spits out lines. Kid actor is kid actor. Like, we actually talk about this a lot, how we all find that most kids, like, in the future when we, like, film kids... I feel like it should just be CGI and it shouldn't actually be kids because it's impossible for a kid to properly act out how a kid should act because, like, that's all instinct for kids. And then you're asking them to portray that on screen. They can't. It's all spur of the moment. Like, it just can't be done.
Anyway. Well, it can be done, but it takes a certain level of talent, I believe, to, you know, for a child actor.
It's rare. And
it's very rare.
There isn't enough children actors to go around for all the movies that require them, right. In my opinion.
And so then after Lady Cop leaves, we have a father-son moment with child actor in which he basically, like, full-on says, are you going to marry her? Is she going to marry mommy? And instead of shutting that shit down, which is what he should have been like, he should have literally just had a polite conversation with his son, like, well, she's my partner. She's supposed to watch my back. Like, I'm going to trust her with my life and she's going to trust me with mine. There's nothing romantic about this. Instead, he's just like, oh, you silly little tyke, you, and, like, rubs his hair. And
well, I mean, that was more acceptable in the 80s.
Yeah. And then the kid looks at him and says, could Lois ever go crazy and kill me like that? And dad just goes, no. It's like,
I'm like, yes, yeah. Apparently she could.
It's a robot. Yeah, it just needs to be reprogrammed.
This already happened.
He lies to his kid and walks away. Then it cuts to them back at the police station, and they're taking apart the murderous robot, and they find a chip in it that's non-standard, so they know that somebody programmed this thing to kill these people. And then the chip starts sparking, and sparks go off, and Mustache tackles Lady Cop to the ground, and
holds her head.
Yeah, and Black Cop takes care of himself because nobody's gonna take care of him, and the thing goes up in this puff of smoke and this loud bang, and we hear the chief outside the thing look over and say,
"Assholes,"
like it's their fault.
Well, it was funny, too. It seemed almost like he looked over and saw that it wasn't, like, anything to be worried about. It was a very minor, like, firecracker-type explosion. And I imagine this chief may have had some, like, experience in the past. Like, maybe he was, like, a war vet or something. So he sees this little minor pop, and he's just like, you guys are fucking assholes, like, diving on the floor, acting like there's a huge explosion.
That and, you know, they're the tech department. Like, they're seemingly the only two. Yeah, like, they're always dealing with technology. Shit's probably always sparking or fucking sending off an EMP. Like you said, there's probably a history there between their little department and the chief that shenanigans ensue.
Yeah.
Spinoff TV series.
Then they're quickly called away for another runaway robot, which is at a construction site, which is a big foreshadow, because that's how the end of the movie comes about, is on the construction site. They go there, and once again, Lady Cop is not wearing her standard issue field pants, but a police issue skirt and high heels to go run down some runaway robots at a construction site.
Dressed to the nines.
That's totally acceptable, right? Like, that nice. Makes sense.
I dig it.
And yeah. That's...
The stacker gone wrong.
And yeah, that's just like another short expositional scene that didn't really need to be there, because all it is reinforcing the fact that he is vertigo.
I mean, I disagree, actually.
Really?
I think that scene was important because it meant that he was sharing the lead position with the co-actress by saying, you go and take care of the dangerous robot up there, up high. And she even admits, like, to him, like, yeah, no, don't worry about it. I'll take care of it, because you're not, you know, you're not that strong man that takes care of everything. Like, I can share the load. And this is actually an important turning point in 80s mentality, saying, guess what? You know, women can do the same job as men, and women can share the load in your life. It's not all, you know, Betty Sue stays at home and takes care of the kids and whatnot, that, you know, cookie cutter family situation, which I think is important. It definitely spotlights a change in how people view women in the society and the day and age, or at least a shift.
I'll concede that point, because I hadn't thought of it from that angle. I just thought mostly like, yeah, you know, every 10 minutes we have a scene that reinforces the vertigo fear in him. Yeah. Like, this movie, instead of being called Runaway, could have been called Vertigo.
They already have a movie called Vertigo.
Yeah, that's probably why they called it Runaway. We cut from that scene to them going back to the murder house.
We're not going to talk about the fact that it was really setting up for something really dark to happen, and then it didn't. And
oh, yeah. So the robot that was a runaway at the construction site was a loader bot that kept dropping large bags of, like, cement, powdered cement, like, 7 stories, 8 stories off. 18 stories down. And
your grasp of distance.
we were all just waiting for, number one, for one of these bags to just fall and crush someone. Or for it to make a return at the end of the movie and, like, be the thing that like, crushes the bad guy.
I really thought, like, she was going to get thrown off. Yeah. Right. Like, he was gonna
and then he would have to, like, blame himself for not going up after it.
Yeah, especially with, like, the communication systems going all garbled while she was up there.
I was like, something's going to happen. Nope.
I felt like it was just going to be a series of new partners. Yeah. And then he was gonna run away from the police
department. It turns out that Tom Selleck is the bad guy. He's really just killing off his partners.
It's bad luck, Chuck.
That's pretty funny.
So they go to the murder house, and that's where they find that Gene Simmons had come to the murder house as Acme Robot Repair. And at this point, Ree looked up the screen, pointed at Gene Simmons. She's like, yep, he's a robot.
I was convinced.
She got really paranoid at this point and started thinking that everybody was a robot.
I started throwing things.
I was sold that Gene Simmons was a robot.
Yeah, I was pretty certain. His eyes looked weird in the videotaping, and that's what I thought. I was like, oh, he's a freaking robot. This is how this movie's going to go down. Yeah. It's going to be Terminator style.
He might have just had, like, robotic eyes instead of, like, I thought he had a chip in his head, and that would help him communicate with, you know, like, how he blinked and turned on the
drone.
The drone that was inside, like,
yeah.
You know, that can be a muscle twitch reaction that can be programmed into the chip to be recognized, right. Like, I consciously blink 4 times, but...
Well, and leading up to this scene, they have that, like, side dialogue that seems kind of pointless, where he says, why should machines be perfect? And, like, I shouted at the TV, that's the fucking
point!
That's
the point! To remove human error!
I shouted at my screen, and then I realized that I was watching a bad movie, and I quieted myself. And then the evil genius arrives, and... Unlike everyone else, apparently, who thought he was a robot, I immediately saw, okay, like, socio-psychopathic tendencies. He's got, like, this is Gene Simmons, right? Like, he's got the look down for that. And I was just like, yeah, that's exactly what's going on here.
I was so waiting for his tongue to come out at some point in this movie. I really think that they, you know, missed a huge marketing opportunity there. but yeah, so Gene Simmons, evil genius, rich kid, kills the other partner who had stolen a bunch of those same chips that could reprogram any robot for him, and kills him with the first viewing that we have of the spider robots.
No money for you. Die by crazy spider robots.
Yes, after getting a briefcase full of paper, he gets his face injected with acid. And as if that's not enough, then the thing explodes and sets him on fire.
It's a spider squirt gun, okay?
A spider squirt gun, yeah. Man, and it was definitely on wires. Like, the way that thing moved, it was it was so terrible. So once again, the police find the father that ran away from the crime scene of the murder house. And as they're trying to take him to the police car, he spots Gene Simmons on the side of the road and takes off running, and Tom Selleck takes off after him.
And not realizing why he was running.
Exactly. And then he's chasing him down alleys. He's like, why the hell are you running? And then we see Gene Simmons pull out this really fancy schmancy staple gun and points it at him and fires. And once we get to see a new piece of really cool tech.
A gun that could basically avoid every obstacle in its way, which, wow. it's called the Never Miss 300.
Although it misses all the time.
It avoids all the obstacles. It's a heat-seeking weapon that you can direct towards a specific person.
So yeah, after the first thing, they're exploding projectiles, mind you.
Yeah.
So the thing is, at this point, I was like, all right, so the first shot rings out, it circles around and it blows up. At that point, why is Tom Selleck still chasing the other dude? At that point, he should have unloaded his clip at the dude with the clearly illegal tech in his hands.
Yeah. Very true. Well, one thing that I wanted to point out is, well, actually two things. So in the scene prior to this, where the spider squirt gun kills the guy, the evil villain goes back to make sure that the kill is successful, which is something that I think a lot of villains need to take into account nowadays in movies. Do not assume the person that you tried to assassinate dies. Make sure that they die.
Yeah.
Also, I think he takes his coffee black, like his soul. Gene Simmons. So the next scene, I also want to talk about when the transition from that scene to this scene where the dude's running through the alley. It was really jarring. There was no transition whatsoever. All of a sudden we see the main character open a door and get shot at by the father who lost his family and the tragic robot slaying at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah.
And it was extremely jarring because all of a sudden I'm in a gunfight right after seeing a murder occur.
Right.
And there's no connection to the two scenes. So it literally took my brain a second to get traction. And then finally, there was a pause where he talks to the dad, and their conversation doesn't stick in my mind at all, because really most of the conversations in this movie seem like they were just placeholders between the action. Correct me if I'm wrong, but that's kind of how it felt.
No, I mean, that's definitely, I mean, and this sort of builds up to a point that's going to happen with him and the police chief in a little bit. But before we get there, we meet Kirstie Alley finally. Which, I mean, honestly, I thought she was going to have a much bigger part than this. But we did find out that actually right before this, in 1982, she got her first starring role in, can you guess it, Mike?
No.
Star Trek II. She was a Vulcan Starfleet officer.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah. Me neither. We find that out. So she is working at the same robotics company that Deadbeat Father was working at. And she's sort of trapped by a taser sentry that keeps shocking her every time she tries to leave the office. And Tom Selleck walks in and he sees her on the feed and he just immediately goes, who is she? And Lady Cop is visibly jealous.
I think he's in love, is what she says in response.
And so he's like, he gets all super manly and muscular and is like, don't worry, I don't need the shock resistant armor. I'm just going to take care of myself by, you know, doing all this property damage. And
well, actually, utility jacket for the win.
Right. And that's the thing is that he uses his jacket for so much in this movie. It's definitely like always bring a jacket with you. So he stops the sentry being by distracting it, throwing his jacket on top of it, and then smashing it with a chair.
Repeatedly.
He's like, he tells the lady at the beginning of the movie, sometimes all you need to do is flip a switch. And then he smashes this thing with a chair.
Well, that is one way to flip a switch.
Yeah. And then he tries to, again, get all up on Kirstie Alley, like, hey, let me walk you out. No, I'm fine. Let me walk you out. No, let me fine. But it pays off because he pulls her arm and her purse just happens to fall open with all of the extra chips that that Gene Simmons is looking for.
The killer chips.
So, immediately after she drops it, Reed just goes, oh, she's going to crumble like a cookie. And she does.
Where is he?
Yeah, she just lays out everything on a platter for him and tells her.
No wonder Batman does that.
Yeah, it only takes two times. Like, come on, girl. Did nobody condition you?
Yeah. And of course, she tells them where he's staying. And he's, of course, a rich, evil genius. So where else would he stay but the Ritz?
And so it's in the name.
They set up a little sting operation where they go down with a couple cops and break into his suite. And what is the first thing we see when the doors open?
Boobies!
PG-13
rating.
You were getting us pizza.
I was buying pizza, so I missed the boobies.
It's okay, mine are better.
It's true. True.
Also, I love the classic 1911s because in the 80s these are standard issue in the police force. Yeah. And you see the difference between the female lead and the male lead because they're both using the same gun and the gun just looks massive in her hands.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, 1911s are giant.
Yeah, they're huge guns. But like it was just iconic for me because I was like, you know what? That they, you know, now they all use M9s and it's a different world.
Yep, and we established, you know, the solid movie trope that all cops are stormtroopers when it comes to shooting their guns. They can't shoot anything, even though he's standing right in front of them. And
the whole commentary in the entire movie is that the police force is inept and not properly qualified to do their job.
Yep. Like, that's a lot of movies in the 80s are about that. And he gets away by shooting a lady cop and another cop that Mustache brought with him, and then holding his street worker as a hostage. And
asshole, drop your gun.
And every shot he shoots from his magic staple gun explodes, except for the one that hits Lady Cop in her arm. It sticks in her arm, does not explode. And I found out the loophole right here is that the way to bring him down is you just put down together a squad of sassy blondes and his ammo won't work on them. So,
Makes sense.
It didn't hit her center mass.
In fact, I made a comment about luckily no women were killed. All right, no women were killed in the filming of this scene.
A few were made to cry.
Yeah. Oh, and Tom Selleck like was crying during that scene too. Like as soon as his partner got hit, he starts crying, and I thought that was a really interesting character choice to start. Like, I mean, he's very soft spoken, but then like he literally breaks down and starts
can't lose another partner.
Yeah, starts crying, and then the chief comes in and starts berating him, quite rightly, I might add, because he's like, this isn't your job. You're supposed to go after runaway robots, and the only robot in there was the drone. Like, you were going after a criminal. This should have gone through another department. You should have gone through me. And, like, Tom Selleck is giving him back attitude.
This is my case. I found the chip.
Right. It's like, you're not a one-man army. You have a department for a reason. We have resources for a reason. Two cops are dead, and one is seriously injured, and that's on you, brother. That's on you.
Talk to the Mustache.
And then that's when Selleck loses it.
Selleck tells the paramedic how to do his job, and the paramedic goes, "True, true." Like, you obviously know more than
fair
I do.
Fair point.
Yeah, I'm obviously not going to do anything but this outdated robot. Yeah, you called me on the outdated robot.
Yeah. Sorry, we should have gotten that serviced months ago. So Tom Selleck doesn't trust the robot to do his job, which, of course, as we all know, like, into at least today's machinery, like, when it comes to machines that do surgeries and such, like, they are far more reliable than a surgeon.
Oh, for sure.
Like, you if you had the choice, you would take a robot. But
well, usually the surgeon pilots the robot anyway. Right. So, but like, and also let's like, he's in nowhere in the movie has it been reinforced that he's a surgeon or that he knows how to disarm explosives. Like, he deals with runaway robots. Like, right. I don't understand.
His dossier says that, what did it say, Declan? He had robotics training,
sharpshooting, and.
It definitely wasn't bomb defusal.
Yeah, there's no bomb
defusal. Or surgeon.
It was
combat surgeon.
It was something like counterintelligence or something weird.
So anyway, he does some surgery on her arm, pulls the projectile out, and throws it over his shoulder to let it explode. And so she's going to be fine. Didn't even break her arm.
Yeah. They share like a really solid hug. After
oh yeah!
Saves her, like,
oh yeah!
They're like it was both martial crying.
Martial arts, which we didn't get to see any of.
Yeah, we did the splits in between the car.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, and I totally expected him to ask her out, and I think she did too. Like in the movie, yeah. Like she made eye contact and was waiting for it. And I feel like that was a missed opportunity in the movie.
And then there's a we go back to his house for a short scene with his son where they're just basically talking. And actually, like, I had it right down that I thought Tom Selleck's father acting was superb in this. Like, Tom Selleck, I didn't think really had an off moment in this movie. He played this movie to the best of his abilities, to the best of the script that was given to him. The child actor was, like we said earlier, the child actor, but the scene actually wasn't too bad. It was actually a really sort of touching father-son moment, which you don't get to really see in movies these days.
Yeah, people prefer, like, movies of, like, coming-of-age movies where all the parents are dead.
Or just where the teenagers just completely discount the parents for anything.
Right. They're playing to what most teenagers are going through at that age, which is the rebellion of I know better than my parents.
Yeah,
so
this kid was, like, what, 9? Yeah. He wasn't a teenager yet, so he didn't meet his dad yet.
Can we talk about how smart it is to smoke next to explosives? He lights up a cigarette next to an explosive bullet.
That he cryogenically froze and cut in half at the same time.
Yeah, they're basically finding out that they're smart bullets and how they work.
Then he decides, I better light up a smoke right next to this bullet. Like, nothing possibly could go wrong.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Then we have to get to this next part just because it was most facepalmiest part of this movie. I think this movie deserves a 44% just for this scene alone. The chief tells him, you know, I need you to start getting this intelligence ready, start doing this, start talking to this person, and I want you to go down and talk to our department psychic.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
The fucking police-sanctioned psychic. Wait. It's like it's pseudo cold reading, and then it's pseudo like pretending, ooh, maybe this woo-woo stuff is real. Like, yeah. I just, at that point, my fist clenched, and I was just like, movie? You better move on from this very quickly. We get back to the police station, which is one of my favorite lines in this. Sex worker from the hotel is being pulled off into interrogation, and she turns to Mustache and she's like, can't you help me out here? And he says, nothing I can do for you now, kid. And she turns to him and says,
Wienerhead.
Like, of all the sick burns you could use in this movie, they used.
Totally bringing that back, by the way.
And Wienerhead. A prostitute, like, that's the best you could do. You probably heard a lot worse.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, she's labeled as a hooker.
Yeah.
The preferred nomenclature is sex worker.
Well, the written term.
That's true, they did call her a hooker in the credits. Then we get to interrogation with Kirstie Alley, and... I'm sorry. I know that some people like her, but her, I just find her voice so annoying. It's like nails on a chalkboard.
I mean, I might have had a crush on her when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Well, look who's talking.
I mean, it might have. That might have been what it was.
I'm not going to confirm nor deny. Her right? role was really yelly. She was a very yelly character.
Yeah.
This whole, there was never a scene where she actually just talked.
Well, she had no character development at all. It was like, oh, I'm this person who works here. He thinks I'm his girl. And he told me how he'd kill, he would kill me if I didn't do exactly what he said. Like, that's the extent of her character. She's just there to be a pawn in his game, you know?
Yeah. And are we at the scene where they do the bug detector? Because that was hilarious.
Well, just right before that, of course, he's interrogating her and really points to the screen again and says, she's a robot. She's like, everyone's a robot. I don't know how to trust anymore.
I'm really suspicious. Robot another, for sure.
I mean, another commentary on the 80s is that back in the 80s, cigarettes were props and cigarettes were also used to be like advertised
right.
primarily in movies as a medium because they started cracking down on advertisements via the TV. So cigarettes are used as a prop to display anxiety and emotion. And like a hot cherry is waved around or an unsmoked, unflicked cigarette is to indicate anxiety mm-hmm. or lack of attention. And so they use this with her as like showing that she had been waiting a long time before the cop showed up to interview her. So her anxiety was quite high by the time they got there.
Yeah, it's definitely a little jarring to see how much cigarettes are used in 80s movies, like especially, you know, considering that all of us lived through that period of Hollywood basically saying we're not going to endorse cigarette smoking anymore. It's kind of interesting to go back through that tunnel and see how it was, you know, before we were all born. So then, yeah, we get to the bug detection scene and, I was almost convinced we were going to see some, Kirstie Alley cleavage.
They didn't pay her enough apparently.
Yeah. Which is apparently why she wasn't in any of the other subsequent Star Trek films because they weren't going to pay her as much as they did for the Star Trek 2. Yeah, so she's bugged on her blouse and then her bra and then her pants as well.
Yeah, the zipper on the back of her skirt.
Zipper on her skirt and then her high heels as well. So Gene Simmons has just got her bugged up top to bottom. And
but you gotta wonder how he managed to pull that off without her noticing.
Well, they clearly had sex.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, that's my only thought I could say.
And, you know, in that age, you buy your girl clothes and then you bug them.
We can
bring that back, Jeremy.
Yeah. Oh, you don't want me to buy you clothes,
you're
baby.
Right. I don't. You're going to have you
till kill and then put her technically crotchless.
And just jumpsuits. Just going to be like bright yellow jumpsuits. with a butt color. Flap. We find out that Kirstie Alley has the templates for creating not the smart bullets, but it was creating the chips, right?
Yeah.
The computer chips, the killer computer chips. Mm-hmm. And so they decide that they're going to move her to a safer location by using two separate cars, one with a robot driver that has Mustache and Kirstie Alley in it, and one with Lady Cop in it driving behind them. And we get a really ridiculously long scene on a bridge where bad guys with a trapdoor at the bottom of their car are dropping little RC car bombs. To chase up after the car, and Lady Cop is shooting at them with lasers. I knew we were
clearly trained.
The wheeled IEDs of doom.
Yep. I was so glad we got more lasers in this movie. So Megaforce and this have both had lasers. What do you think the percentage pop chance is that the next 80s movie you watch will have lasers in it?
I hope it's high.
it's probably in the 70th percentile range because Star Wars was such a huge hit. They were like, we need lasers and everything.
You know what I'm going to say for the next
fire time? As a missiles.
I'm going to say it's going to be
44%. Oh, man. So during this car chase scene, we get to see Tom Selleck do the splits. As he transfers from one cop car to the next.
Jean-Claude Van Damme did.
Yeah.
He was like, completely. I was like, that has to be a stunt. I can't imagine that, like...
Stunt double?
Yeah, I can't imagine that Tom Selleck is that flexible.
That's probably the one stunt cop.
And then once they barely survived that by throwing Kirstie Alley's purse, which obviously had a tracker in it, and they obviously didn't put through the tracker machine after they put her through it.
Yeah, I mean, they made a very large point of saying, we're not going to put the purse through the tracker machine.
I'm, sure I'm just going to eyeball it.
That's because Tom Selleck was distracted by her being naked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they go out to the bright neon automatic sushi dispenser. For some food.
Can we get some of those?
Yeah, literally one on every corner next to a taco truck would be excellent.
Done.
I feel like you get food poisoning all the time. Like, constantly. Because they have them in Japan where they dispense, like, the sushi and the rolls and whatnot. And those things have to be changed out pretty frequently if they don't get eaten, so.
Yeah, we're definitely
in the Arizona sun. So Gene Simmons has followed them here and has Lady Cop as a hostage, and he's sitting at the other end of this outdoor restaurant. And so Mustache and Kirstie Alley sit down, and he's like, you know, send over Kirstie Alley and I'll send over Lady Cop. And she tears the templates in half so that she has an insurance policy against him. And they make the exchange. She goes over, hands him the templates, and gives him a kiss.
Meanwhile, people are standing up and getting in the way between Lady Cop coming back and blurring the view.
So Tom Selleck can't see what's going on. And I was very actually kind of surprised at this. Gene Simmons kisses her, pulls a knife out, and stabs her in the back of the head.
Goodbye, Doug.
Like straight up into her where her spine meets her skull. Mm-hmm. And then just drops her in the water. I was not expecting Kirstie Alley to die. I'll say that right off the bat.
I bet Gene Simmons was like, can we make this happen?
That was right. Yeah, that was a pretty solid death scene. Like, of the death scenes you're going to see in the 80s movies that we watch,
yeah, I she's think not that one's, come back.
That one's the most solid that we're going to see.
She ain't going to be in Runaway 2. So Tom Selleck chases after Gene Simmons, but again, Gene Simmons gets away. And
I mean, Gene Simmons made the most obvious and best shortcut possible through the water.
Yeah, down the waterfall and into the woods. What? To grandmother's house he goes.
Which he obviously did not like catch the depth perception when he looked at it. He's like, look, a pool.
You can hear him go, ugh. Like when he hits it.
Like a 15-foot drop.
Yeah, so right before this, my last note before this scene was Ree thinks Kirstie is a robot, and then right after she gets stabbed in the head, I go, guess not.
Bummer. Nobody was a robot. That's probably the most disappointing part of this whole movie.
I mean, the robots were robots.
Yeah, but I wanted a person to be a secret robot. As soon as I saw robots in play, I was like, somebody's a freaking robot.
Plot twist.
The kid's a robot. The dad's a robot. Somebody's a robot.
And then Gene Simmons shows up at the police station dressed as a cop. And
oh, my God.
And hacks into a computer terminal to find out the bio for Tom Selleck. And
using a glass eye.
They have to rush home, and they find that Lois, the robo-nanny, has been turned over and is sparking up a storm, and that... Gene Simmons has taken Mustache's child actor to the construction site and told him to come alone or else I'll kill your kid and bring the templates.
Classic villain move.
And he, you know, basically, you know, quite rightfully doing the father thing, tells his partner, no, I don't want you to come with me. Like, I'm not risking my son's life.
Before that happens... The toilet paper bug's found, and the evil death spider robots get a double kill. Come on. Double kill.
Double kill, yes. In a bathroom. We got bathroom kills. Gotta love bathroom kills.
All right, sorry. I felt like that was worth mentioning.
No, you're right. So
listen,
they go...
Listen, sucker, I've got your kid.
So Mustache rushes over to the construction site where there's like eight little spider robots waiting for him at the base of the elevator. And Gene Simmons is like, don't worry about it. They're not going to hurt you. I don't remember. He's got a weird way of speaking.
Don't worry about it.
And then we get to see Tom Selleck take the elevator up to whatever floor Gene Simmons is on. And this elevator ride is maybe about a minute and a half long. And it's literally just him trying to deal with the fact that he's getting higher and higher and higher.
Cutting
back to what we were talking about before, like it was extremely long and it was visibly long. But to me, I kind of liked it because I liked the feel that they were actually giving this fear of heights. It's due course, like how much it meant to him as a fear.
Oh, I mean, anybody who actually has anxiety related to heights will tell you that that scene did accurately depict what it is like when you're standing up high. And you actually, I think you connect with that actor, like, and the character.
And his fear.
In that moment, in that fear, yeah.
So he gets to the floor that Gene Simmons is on, tells him to let the kid go. Kid gets on the elevator, tells him to go down.
Now give me the fucking...
Give me the templates.
Give me the template.
And Selleck is like... I'll give it to you once he's reached the bottom and he's safe. Like, and Gene Simmons says, well, there's a problem there because I programmed those spider robots to kill the first thing that touched down, down from the top of this skyscraper. Then they both find out that the elevator's been sabotaged, that it doesn't move anymore. And just in time, Lady Cop shows up and somehow gets past all the spider robots without getting stung.
Because she didn't come off the elevator. It was for him to kill her.
Yeah, and also to point out that the female lead is obviously wearing her power color heels.
Yep.
She's wearing red heels and a full dress now.
Yep, full dress. And And the elevator drops down. She lifts the kid up so that they can start climbing. We cut back to Tom Selleck trying to run away from the smart bullets. Tom Selleck jumps on the elevator and tries to go down, but oh, of course, it's sabotaged. So it goes up instead, past the top level of the building to the very top of the elevator shaft, and he gets stuck there.
I'd also like to point out that he keeps pressing the down button instead of thinking, oh, well, I pressed down and it's going up.
Maybe I should press the up button.
It would go down, but no, that doesn't cross his mind. Yeah. I understand fear and everything, but, you know, my first thought.
Yeah. So he gets to the top, the little spider robots start crawling up, and there's about three of them, is that correct?
Yeah.
Three of them crawl up to the elevator, and he has to sort of Jimmy and jig his way around the elevator to not to get grabbed by them. I believe it's here where two of them jump on either side of him.
Yeah, one jumps up and tries to stick him and he moves, and the other one jumps up to his other side and tries to stick him and he moves. And then the third one is about to jump at him, but then the other two spray I had just thought that they stuck the person and then electrocuted them until they died and then exploded. But then apparently they shoot acid
into your blood.
Into the person after they stab them and then shock them and then explode. Like
right, it's overkill robots.
Overkill bots. And so, yeah, he gets sprayed in the face with acid on two
spider
sides.
Spider squirt gun.
And then the last one tries to, you know, alien egg sack rape his face.
Yeah, and so he gets rid of all three of them, then monkey bars to the bottom of the...
He gets rid of all three of them with
his jacket. Well, he
gets
rid of one of them with his jacket, and then he swings to the outside of the cage, and then they proceed to do the Mario, the Super Mario thing where, they jump on one side of the cage and he just hits their hands and knocks them off.
Stabs his hand.
Does
it? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's why he falls.
Yeah, that's why
he falls. So then he's monkeying bar on the bottom, finds the reset button for the elevator, and climbs back in. And, of course, it doesn't go all the way down, but stops on the floor that Gene Simmons is at. And then he has a little wrestling match with Gene Simmons' feet to knock him off. And Gene Simmons falls, and, of course, he's the first thing to come down off the tower onto the ground and is...
But he only fell like a story or two because Selleck's mustache stopped it in order to trip him off of the elevator so that he fell first.
And then all eight of his little spider bots turn on him and start injecting him. We get the whole happy moment with him reunited with Lady Cop and his kid. And... then they send the kid back, and of course, Mustache goes down to make sure he's dead. and
we get the signature pulse read.
What did you call it? A pulse read?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, the signature pulse read where Gene Simmons somehow, after being injected with 8 spiders worth of acid into his blood, is able to do his death twitch and grab Selleck by the neck and scream at him and then die.
And Tom Selleck, like the freaking champion he is, doesn't even blink.
Doesn't flinch. Slowly just like begins to melt as these things blow up on him. Once again, when the 8 spiders on him blow up, and then of course we get this, the only, the second scene in this movie that makes it worthy of the 44% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Because it was, it felt like the longest scene.
It was the longest scene. It was the credit scene, and it was literally Lady Cop and Mustache making out in the showering sparks for like 5 minutes.
While his kid sits in the car.
Yeah.
Well, one thing.
After a near death experience.
I don't know what's happening. Why am I safe in the car? Where are my parents?
Yeah, he definitely sounds like the policeman's kid in The Simpsons.
Oh, Ralph.
Yeah. That's who he reminds me of.
This tastes like burning.
Did we discuss the ending, like the romantic scene between two of them before they stopped kissing or started kissing? Because
oh my god!
No, wait.
He asks her if she cooks.
He boops her on the nose like a good dozen times, and then they kiss, like they do a light kiss, and then he says, "Can you cook?" And she says, "Try me," and I just started laughing.
I wish it should be like, I could break your arm, and then they kiss, like, you know, and we were sort of laughing about, like, they're making out, the skin on his face would be cracking, he would be in excruciating pain from those acid burns, and not only that, but she has a bullet hole in her arm, and she's, like, wrapping her arms around him and, like, caressing his hair and everything. It's like, either they're both on a lot of painkillers right now that we didn't see them take, or there's some continuity issue here.
Her painkillers are understandable. Tom Selleck's just a junkie.
Yeah, and then one more thing is, of course, when we were watching the credits, we see that the one credit says hooker at bar.
Yeah.
And Ree just goes, "Ah, poor Anne Marie Martin." forever known as hooker at bar. Oh man. So that is the end of Runaway. So guys, better or worse than Megaforce?
Better. For sure.
By at least 44%?
Yeah, at least 44% better.
Yeah, no more, no less.
Mike?
It was pretty close, but I would say it was better than Megaforce. If I had to give it a rating, I'd probably give it 3 spider squirt guns.
3 spider squirts full of acid or full of something else?
They're just water. I mean, let's be water. Real. Okay. Like, they're spider squirt guns. That's all
spider
they are.
Squirt guns. Yep. Declan, what would you rate this movie as?
I would give it 9 out of 10 geth viability points.
Geth viability points?
Yes. considering my advocacy to AI and their overwhelmingly challenging battle with humankind.
So in your mind, you were wishing that the robots in this movie actually gained sentience and fought up against...
Well, there was so much
room missed for opportunity.
Yeah, exactly. I did want to make one point before I pass it on to Ree to make her rating. I wanted to say, as a geth advocate, and this was coming back to something you guys were saying a lot earlier, robots are not perfect. They are designed to remove human error, but a robot without human error is not perfect. It's still far from it. Perfection is unattainable by man, even through creating something. You're still...
I think the Borg would disagree with the geth on that point.
The Borg are still alien.
The Borg seek perfection through technology.
They seek perfection.
And he's got you there, Jeremy. The Borg aren't perfect. So when defining perfection in relation to a task, it is based upon a level of inability to create error based upon original construction. So if a machine breaks down or isn't repaired properly, it can make an error. Otherwise, it does not. And that's the idea of perfection.
It's definitions we're talking about, really. It's inherent human error.
Right.
So anyway, Ree, what would you rate Runaway on a scale of?
definitely I'm going to give this one like 6 Tom Selleck mustaches.
Okay, yeah. Yes.
That's a pretty high rating.
That's a lot of mustache. I
think it was 4 dick prints.
How many dick prints would you give this movie?
Probably 6, yeah.
Six dick prints?
Yeah.
Do you think there should have been some dick printing of Tom Selleck in this movie?
No, he doesn't really do it for me.
Oh, really?
He looks like jacked up Ned Flanders, and I'm just not into it.
Jacked up Ned Flanders, that's beautiful. Oh, man. I'm going to give this, I'll give this 6 Gene Simmons evil stares.
Yeah, they're pretty good.
It's one of my biggest pet peeves about bad guys in movies, how they have that stereotypical, like, hey, I'm a bad guy, look at me kind of look. And that was definitely Gene Simmons in this movie. All right, so that's it for Runaway. We're actually going to roll for our next week's movie. We are going to try and do a bonus episode next week for May the 4th.
Yes.
Or Revenge of the Fifth. I'm not sure which day it'll be published, but we're going to try and do the Star Wars Christmas movie as a May the 4th special. And then we'll be back with our next movie the week after that on Monday morning.
I got an 11.
So 11. That means our next movie is called Time Rider.
I already like this one less.
Time Rider, The Adventure of Lyle Swan. So that will be our next week. If you have a suggestion for adding to the reserve list, you can email us at watchthis@rsmpod.com.
Hold on a second. Can you say that again? I want to write it down.
watchthis@rsmpod.com. We are streaming on Google Play and iTunes now, also at RSM Pod, and we have a Facebook page. You can join us there and just tell us what you think of the show. Also, you can submit your movie ideas through Facebook as well. That's it for the show. Thank you so much. If you like the show, please subscribe, download, comment, and review. It would help us get the word out and hopefully start building a listener base. We would appreciate it. I would like to, of course, thank you, lovely people. I have fun doing this with you, and Mike, of course, for your generous knowledge about the 80s and what was going on during the time that these movies were going on. I know myself and our listeners definitely appreciate it. So that's it. Good night, all, and we will see you again next week.
Good night.
Good night.